access number 12417 real 3.
Major Watson, the real 3.
Yes, as I said before, a number of the 7th, 12th and 8th Battalion members were found amongst our group, and they were soon directed towards their own areas. I felt sorry for the men of the 8th Battalion because they were some distance away from their dropping zone, but nevertheless they were very keen to get away from us and go and rejoin the battalion. What happened to them, I don't know, but no doubt they got there. At about, this was, as it was, I said before, we dropped at 10 minutes to 1. At about 1:45 a.m., we found we were only, we were about 60% strong. 40% of our battalion was still not in or missing. In fact, we found later on that a lot had been dropped in the wrong areas, where to the east, where there was a river called the River Dee, which ran parallel to the Orne Canal, and. A lot of our men were dropped in this area. Now, I know I also was two of my sections were missing, and I learnt later they'd dropped about 4 or 5 miles beyond the DZ, and I didn't see them again until later. Or some of them got through, some were captured. Now, one had to make a quick decision because we knew that we had some the task to do. My company was A Company, which we had to get, our job was get back on the DZ, join up with the 591 power engineers to blow up the poles, which had been put on the DZ by the Germans as the anti-landing poles. All right for parachutists, but not very good for gliders. So the CO decided that we had to get on with our job. We had to, B and C Company task was to capture the village of Romville, and there were certain other things going on in the divisional area. And these had to be achieved before daylight. So I, my company's task was to return to the DZ, as I said before, with 591 Company on engineers with their explosives to demolish the poles, and also to fill in any ditches which had been dug on the DZ, which we noticed actually when we came in after dropping onto the after landing on the ground on the way into the to the RV.
Were those tasks achieved easily, or were there problems?
Yes, we there was at 3:15 hours we knew that at that time the advanced division headquarters of the division were coming in gliders. There were, if I remember right, 6 Hamilcar gliders coming in, and the rest were Horses. They were bringing in the division commander, General Gale, and some of his staff. There were 6 pounders which we needed for defence, anti-tank guns, for to secure the roads, and also very much needed 17 pounders which will come in by glider, in the Hamilcars, which is a much bigger glider than the Horsa. And also various other equipment, jeeps and trailers, which we'll need for the defence of the area, which we have to hold before the sea landing assault took place at about 7 o'clock in the morning. We knew that was they were coming in. In fact, we saw them as we were flying over. So we moved off onto the DZ and started to clear the lanes for the gliders to come in on. Now, during that time, the Germans were alerted, and what was happening, and we were starting to be mortared quite heavily, and machine gun fire. But we worked quite fast as a team. We've been practicing this quite a lot, well before then, on Salisbury Plain. In fact, we used telegraph poles, but when we got onto the EZ, they were much lighter than we thought they were going to be. But nevertheless, we completed our task by 3 o'clock in the morning. As I said before, we were trained to remove telegraph poles and the so-called, what they call, rubble of asparagus. Weren't as heavy as we thought they were going to be. At 15 minutes past 3 in the morning, the gliders started to come in bang on time. One really absolutely amazed how the RAF flew to time on this operation. At 3:15 in came the gliders, and I'm not quite sure what was worse, being fired at by the Germans and mortared, or being chased by a glider. They were due to come in from north to south. And in fact, they came in every direction. They came in south, east, west, and north. And we had quite a job to dodge them. In fact, one or two of our men were hit by the gliders.
They must have crashed into each other then.
Yes, they did. But the noise of the smashing the wood in the dark and the sparks were coming from the gliders as they hit the ground was very frightening, quite horrific. It was an absolute, as I said, it was an absolute nightmare. You know, the sound of the splintering wood and yells from the occupants, you know, it's like hell let loose. But the amazing thing about the whole, that landing by the Bars Division headquarters and bringing in the anti-tank guns and trailers, they all seemed to got out. Maybe that. Some of the jeeps were jammed in the aircraft, into the gliders, but everybody seemed to get out quite safely, including the divisional commander. We just simply thought, well, I don't know, there's going to be a lot of dead men here. But in fact, as far as I remember, they all got out safely. It's so uncanny. The pursuits, they cleared the DZ. We then returned, we rejoined the battalion. By that time, the A and B and C company had already captured Rommel by 2:30, and they were all well dug in by then in the area of Rommel. We then rejoined them on the south and east side of Rommel, and my task then as platoon commander was to lay a minefield. These were then set up in a pre-arranged area. Obviously, came in on the early landing of the gliders, the advanced division, advanced elements. And I picked up the mines, and off we went put these across the road to deny the enemy coming down in to recapture Rommel and also getting down to the bridge. Because no doubt, before we arrived, six gliders of the Ox and Bucks light infantry, their task was to capture the bridge over the river, over the canal, intact. And it was important that they captured these two bridges intact, because this was going to be where the landing force had to come to proceed towards Caen. So, because we were in the area of Rommel, and because they happened to put these mines down, this was to deny any movement by tanks or vehicles to come through and capture Rommel and make their way down to the bridges. So it was terribly important we had to get these mines down. But anyway, by daylight I completed the task. It was not quite so. It took us quite a bit into the day to complete it. But we finished it. Our next job was to form a perimeter and get well dug in with the rest of the battalion and deny any movement to recapture Rommel. And in spite of, we were obviously by that time been mortared during the day quite heavily. And later on that day we were counterattacked by three tanks. But we destroyed them, which was a very good thing. Otherwise they got through, and they'd been a totally different picture. In the of the bridges.
Did you see them destroyed?
Yeah, I saw them destroyed by one of our six pounders. Destroyed it.
How did it happen?
Well, as they came round the corner from the air of a place called Le Menon, from the high ground, the our six pounder gun crew. They saw us. They knew we were there, but I don't think they knew what was good. I don't think the Germans or these tanks thought we'd had any anti-tank weapons, and they picked them off quite easily as they came around the corner. So they got the six pounders destroyed three of them quite quickly. What I'd like to cover is the difficulties one has to face on a night drop. I think it's important. as it was June, there was quite high, a lot of most of the D zone was a cornfield, and a lot of our equipment, that is, say, the equipment which were dropped in containers, I actually jumped out of Dakota, and quite a lot of the Dakotas were carrying the containers with additional equipment, such as the 3-inch mortars, and we couldn't find them because of the high corn. Although when the container hits the ground, there's a light that shoots up, and then it should indicate to anybody clearing the DZAB that where that light was, there was a container, but you couldn't see them. So therefore, we for the early stage, we couldn't find our mortars. I think this happened with the rest of the other battalions. Although, because of a certain task that the 12th battalion were going to do, our machine gun platoon from the 13th went with the 12th round to support them. And the platoon commander, a chap called Dixie Dean, decided at his own initiative to actually jump with the mortar barrel and with the machine gun and his tripod and so on in their kit bags. And a jolly good thing he did, because it was important that they had machine guns in the 12th Battalion area because of the open ground facing them. But he was the only one who had machine guns actually in action at the early stages. So if he hadn't done that, then it would have been a bit of a different story for the protection of where the 12th Battalion were. So that was one of the difficulties. The other thing was men who actually wounded or killed on the DZ, we were difficult to find in the early stages, and it wasn't until daylight that, because of the high corn, that we were able to locate them and evacuate them to the RAP, the regimental aid post. Also, a number of our men who overshot, where the aircraft overshot the DZ, were hanging up in trees. Some were shot whilst hanging there, and some we actually did get down. But quite a number did drop actually into the trees on the edge of the DZ near Romville. Our second command was also missing, and he wasn't found until very late that afternoon of the 6th. When he was found, both his legs were broken. He'd landed on one of the poles. And when the medics found him, on a lighter note, he was cursing because he lost his cigars. In fact, he was a great cigar smoker. He had them in his pack, and the pack was obviously in one of the containers, and he all he seemed to be cursing about was, where the hell were my cigars? And a lighter note, in fact, I actually went out as a lieutenant and then found myself captain in command of the battalion. I actually took over from this unfortunate fellow, who was evacuated back in England within about 48 hours.
So you were in command of the battalion?
No, I was second in command of the company. He was our second in command. The other interesting thing was, as far as the battalion was concerned, we had three Alsatian dogs which jumped with us. And we used them with our sniper section, and used to use them when we went out on patrol. Two unfortunately were killed, but one called Bing, actually he served with us right through Normandy, the Ardennes, and jumped on the Rhine.
What was the idea of the Alsatian dogs?
Well, we used them on patrols to sniff out. Quite a useful animal to have around. And they, in fact, they used to be the number 21 of the aircraft. We had each dog had a handler, and the handlers were always number 20 with the dog behind him. And and they used to follow the handler out through the door. In fact, the chute we had a specially designed harness, and it was actually a folding bicycle chute we used for them to jump on top. And even during our training, they were certainly seemed to enjoy it. They used to bark all the way down. But they were a tremendous asset as far as I said before, going out on patrols, helping to sniff. So we found them very useful. But sadly, we lost two in the early stages. They were killed. So that was the our first day. It was a very exciting day. We had plenty. I can't really remember eating brewing up at all, or having something to eat. I think we had our 24-hour ration pack, which we carried with us. But I think we had so much to do and so many tasks to fulfill. I just don't remember. I think eventually we must have eaten, but I don't remember having time. I think because of our training, and because having time to be well briefed and studying what we had to do, and what each right down to the private soldier within the section, and considering too that we were only then 60% strong. In fact, my platoon only had one section, and platoon headquarters. But we did the task, and I think, which I think was a great achievement, and from then onwards we denied whatever happened on the latter days of the operation. So that was day one, and then from then onwards it was purely, despite heavy mortar fire, despite being attacked, we didn't lose ground at all.
You just held on to those positions?
Held on to those positions. Of course, later on, the seaborne troops came in at about 7 o'clock in the morning. and I think the first contacts were made at the bridge very late that evening or early hours of the following morning. But it was a very rewarding experience, as far as I'm concerned. Later on, there was a high ground, a place called Breville, which hadn't been taken at that time. There were still Germans there, but eventually they were cleared by the 12th Battalion and the Devons, which were glider-borne. What happened at on D-Day at 5:30? We witnessed a tremendous sight when the rest of the division came in by glider. The Ochsenbucks, the Royal Assault Rifles, and one company of the Devons all came in at 5:30 and landed on the DZ, then it was a DZLZ. And that was a tremendous relief because that large number of men coming in, it helped to reinforce the perimeter of the division. So that was a welcome sight. Because of lack of glider space, the rest of the Devons came in by sea, but that was later. They boys came in the same time by sea, or joined up that time about 5:30, which then strengthened the rest of the divisional area. The Ochsenbucks passed through us and went south to a place called Uvalette, and also the Ulster Rifles. So by that time, the whole area was completely tied up, denying and holding the ground to ensure that the landing force, the sea landing force, were able to get onto the ground and head towards Caen, because that's a different story. It didn't happen for some time later. But at least we denied that area right through until the breakout started. There was one attack which was made onto the 13th Battalion, which was, if I remember right, about the 10th of June, when the Germans decided they'd had enough of being held back. They decided to attack the 13th Battalion positions from the air of Breville,